coming up on the noon hour. This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. I'm Jared. I'll be taking you through the Midday Report and Ivan Messenger coming up. Well, let's check in the weather first. Right now in Kodiak, it's 57 degrees. It's a beautiful, beautiful day outside. A little bit of wind, but it's going to be clear. Some few clouds might be moving in later on this afternoon, but looks like sun, and more sun taking us all the way through Independence Day. It's going to be pretty nice. Up in Anchorage right now, 61 degrees. Light wind, visibility 10 miles also. A lot of sun. They might get up to 70 degrees today up in Anchorage. Not too bad. All right, well, let's take a look at the headlines before we jump into the national headlines from NPR coming up on the Midday Report. We've got some news about the extension for the Paycheck Protection Program for fishermen. Updates, more updates on the COVID-19 cases locally and statewide. We have new numbers from yesterday to report. Alaska Airlines is getting serious about mask requirements for travel, so stay tuned for their new policies. And then the 2020 Alaska salmon season continues to disappoint. These headlines and more coming up on the Midday Report after national news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Media reports that Russia put bounties on the heads of American troops in Afghanistan have the attention of the Senate Intelligence Committee today. NPR's Greg Myrie reports lawmakers are scheduled to hear from the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, after the New York Times first reported that U.S. intelligence officials briefed President Trump about Russia's arrangement with Taliban affiliates months ago.
Now, President Trump has said he didn't know about any of this until it broke in the media a few days ago. But we are seeing reports that he was briefed in some form, if not directly face-to-face by his CIA briefer, then it was may have been in his presidential daily briefing book that he and his top advisors would have access to and would be expected to look at.
NPR's Greg Myrie. A federal investigation into Boeing 737 MAX finds that the company misled regulators about a critical flight control system on the plane. NPR's David Shaper reports the investigation by the Department of Transportation's Inspector General could help bolster efforts to reform the aircraft certification process.
The DOT Inspector General found that in the initial stages of developing the 737 MAX, Boeing described a new automated flight control system called MCAS as a modification that was relatively benign. But over time, Boeing made significant changes to MCAS so it would act more forcefully and repeatedly. And the investigation finds the company failed to disclose those changes to the FAA. Investigators say the system was flawed, and in plane crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia, it erroneously forced the planes into fatal nosedives. The IG's report also faults the FAA for poor communication and for handing over too much of the responsibility for certifying the plane to Boeing. Lawmakers say the findings will help them craft legislation to strengthen FAA oversight. David Shaper, NPR News.
Dozens of arrests today in Seattle as police work to clear the Capitol Hill organized protest zone that formed several weeks ago around a police precinct. We have more from NPR's Martin Costi.
When intense protests by large crowds caused the police to abandon a precinct building 3 weeks ago, Black Lives Matter supporters set up camp in surrounding streets and a nearby park, making it a center for political demonstrations. But a rash of shootings in the last couple of weeks has soured the mood, and now a large contingent of police has retaken the area. Speaking here via Como TV, Police Chief Carmen Best, who's Black, said, quote, enough is enough.
Our job is to support peaceful demonstrations. But what has happened here over the last few weeks, is lawless and it's brutal. And bottom line, it is simply unacceptable.
Protest groups have vowed to keep up the pressure on the city to defund the police department. Martin Costi, NPR News, Seattle.
The Nasdaq ends the day up nearly 1%, S&P up nearly 0.5%. This is NPR. U.S. factories are picking up steam after a sharp pandemic-related slowdown this spring. NPR's Scott Horsley reports an index of manufacturing activity shows both factory orders and output jumped last month.
The index shows manufacturing activity expanded in June after shrinking for three previous months. A survey of factory purchasing managers found most enjoying a gradual pickup in sales after a very weak spring. Food and beverage manufacturers, who've done well throughout the pandemic, say they're having trouble keeping up with demand. Most other factories say they're able to get the supplies they need as COVID-related disruptions ease. The index does not yet show growth in factory employment, but the picture has improved from previous months. Factory managers are hoping for a continued recovery in the second half of the year, if it's not sidetracked by a new surge in coronavirus infections. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Payroll processor ADP is out with a survey revealing private employers added nearly 2.4 million jobs last month. Some of the biggest gains in the small business sector hit hard in the coronavirus pandemic. New caseloads are rising in more than half the country. Public health experts are imploring people to help slow the virus's spread by wearing masks in public and social distancing. Well, that could prove a major challenge come July 4th. President Trump's inviting crowds to downtown D.C. for the biggest fireworks display ever. The administration's promising 300,000 masks, but notes people don't have to wear them, which has local leaders trying to control the outbreak bristling. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Tire Rack, offering a tire decision guide and user reviews to help people find tires that fit their needs and driving conditions. Learn more at TireRack.com. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Fishermen and other small businesses may get another chance to apply for the Paycheck Protection Program, which provides federal loans to help them stay afloat during the COVID-19 pandemic. That information comes from the office of Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan following Tuesday's deadline for applying for the money. Fishermen and other businesses in Alaska were frustrated by confusion about the PPP, its complexity and inadequate application process, and the lack of support to banks, which were to provide the stimulus money. On Tuesday, the U.S. Senate unanimously passed a bill extending the application period for the PPP program, which allows fishermen and other small businesses until August 8th to access the $130 billion still available for loans, according to Amanda Coyne, a spokesperson for Senator Sullivan's office. The measure still must be approved by the House of Representatives. Sullivan said he is optimistic that the House will go along with the extended deadline. Fishermen were told late last week that a glitch in the wording was fixed that barred fishing operations from claiming fishermen under the employee provision. Fishermen are generally self-employed contractors who are paid based on a percentage of the value of the catch. But the last-minute change in regulations meant fishermen and fishing operations had just a few working days to gear up and apply for the relief funds. Coyne said in a text message to KMXT, quote, "Senator Sullivan understands that the narrow window provided by the recent rule change precluded many fishermen from applying before the original deadline, and he hopes that this bill passes the House so Alaska's fishermen have until August 8th to take advantage of the available PPP funding," unquote. It was a narrow window of time that opened just a few days ago. A change in the federal program to help fishermen caught up in the economic fallout from COVID-19. It was announced 4 days before the deadline to apply, a deadline that passed 7:59 p.m. last night. Eligibility for the program was expanded to allow seasonal fishermen and their crew members to apply for the Paycheck Protection Program, but the news came at one of the busiest times of the year for fishermen. Kodiak Representative Louis Stute says fishermen were set up to fail.
What the hell are you thinking?
Stutes chairs the legislature's Fisheries Committee, and although the program is federal, she says she's heard from a lot of frustrated fishermen.
How many significant, important, critical meetings are scheduled to take place during a fishing season, whether it be the Board of Fish or whatever it is? I've seen it many times, and you just got to stop and say, what is wrong with you people?
The Paycheck Protection Program was designed to help businesses keep employees on the payroll during the COVID-19 crisis. The fishing industry, though, never shut down and had different economic impacts, such as travel restrictions and quarantines, as well as a crash in prices for their catch due to restaurant closures. But the biggest problem it faced, fishing crew members and other seasonal workers who weren't eligible for relief, because the federal government considered those workers private contractors. The fix, Stutz says, was too little, too late.
It's horrifying to me. The formulas that they use to distribute those funds was just outrageous. And the avenue is just very inequitable and very difficult to deal with.
Fishermen had to work with a bank to process their applications, which loan officers at Northrim Bank said was time-consuming, though some fishermen did manage to meet the deadline. Stutz says she doesn't fault Alaska's congressional delegation, who worked to restructure the program but ran out of time. If that doesn't work out, she says there's another pot of money to tap, a state program that will have about $50 million to distribute. And we'll have updates on that program later on this week. Alaska's COVID-19 case number continues to climb. After posting a new daily high on Monday of 48 confirmed COVID-19 cases, state health officials reported 41 new COVID-19 cases by the end of the day on Tuesday, 38 Alaskans and 3 non-residents. Cumulatively, 978 Alaskans and 198 non-residents who are in Alaska have tested positive for the virus. There are currently 436 active cases of the virus in Alaska, and 114,400 tests have been performed. Of the resident cases, 15 are from Anchorage, 2 Eagle River, 1 from Homer, 2 from Kenai, 1 from Seward, 1 from Soldotna, 3 from Fairbanks, 3 from Tok, 2 from Palmer, 4 from Wasilla, and 1 from Willow, 1 from Nome, and 1 from the Northwest Arctic Borough, and 1 in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. Of the non-resident cases, 1 is in Anchorage as a visitor, 1 is in Sitka in the seafood industry, and 2 cases where it's unknown where the person is, but one of them does work in the seafood industry. In other data reported to the state by the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, 1,000 of the state's 1,900 inpatient beds, 80 of its 198 ICU beds, and 27 of its 347 ventilators are in use, both by COVID and non-COVID patients. 20 people are currently hospitalized. Our 20 people who are currently hospitalized are COVID-19 positive or pending the results of a COVID-19 test. Governor Mike Dunleavy said during a news conference yesterday that he would use things like the coronavirus case counts and hospital capacity to consider whether to change state health policies. When asked if he would impose restrictions on bars, Dunleavy says he will evaluate state data over the next week or two.
Looking at our bed counts, looking at all the metrics that we have, based upon that, we will make decisions on advisories, protocols, and other steps if we need to. Everything is on the table to fight a pandemic.
Dunleavy credits Alaskans' behavior with leading to some of the lowest case counts in the country, but cases have increased in recent weeks. And Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says though these cases are in different parts of the state, bars have been at the center of some of the spread.
Just over the past weekend, we had 7 cases in 7 different bars that had tested positive with a lot of outbreaks. And bars right now are a really high-risk activity. And so if you do attend a bar, particularly indoors, know that that's a high-risk activity and you really need to minimize your contact with others, particularly those who are vulnerable for the next 14 days afterwards. We are just seeing more and more outbreaks associated with that.
Zink says Anchorage hospitals, which serve as a hub for healthcare in the state, are running at roughly 80% capacity. The COVID-19 pandemic, with its constant stream of numbers, is a challenge to follow. Scientists and health officials who keep track of the overall picture worry about duplicating stats. That's why they count residents and non-residents separately. On KMXT's Lowdown, Elsa DeHart, a public health nurse, said sometimes the local numbers are more current and the state lags behind.
We make sure that the provider has enough time to talk to the person first, but then we put it out there that we have another case because we really want to be that up on it. And, you know, locally we can do that. It's just you have to think about the numbers that we're seeing across the state right now that are pouring into that they're trying to manage all that data. It's incredible, the numbers.
DeHart says locals seem to be doing a good job of wearing masks and social distancing, but Dr. Steve Smith, a doctor at Providence Hospital, says there's still room for improvement. And if you see people who aren't wearing masks, you should take care to avoid them, especially places where people congregate without masks.
Anytime you increase the concentration of people who aren't social distancing, aren't wearing a mask to try and limit their own spread to other individuals, that you're at a higher risk.
If you see people without masks in enclosed public spaces, rather, there isn't too much you can do except step away. So what if they're coughing and sneezing? One of the guests on Lowdown suggested you can carry some extra masks to offer to people to remind them to do the right thing. To hear this Wednesday's entire Lowdown show, jump onto kmxt.org. Speaking of masks, Alaska Airlines is getting serious about wearing masks on their flights. This week, the airline announced that flight attendants will be able to issue what is called a, quote, final notice to any guest who repeatedly refuses to wear a mask or face covering. The warning comes in the form of a yellow card, which flight attendants could hand to travelers who disregard Alaska's mask requirements. With that card, the flyer's travel will be reviewed and possibly suspended for a period. The yellow card warning is part of Alaska Airlines' mask enforcement policy. At check-in, travelers will be asked to sign off on a required health agreement, including their willingness to adhere to the mask policy. Exceptions are any children under the age of 2, anyone with a medical issue or disability that creates trouble breathing or prevents wearing a mask, and anyone who cannot remove a mask without assistance. Alaska Airlines has had to implement this policy as flight crews continually encounter travelers who disregard or disobey the airline's mask requirement. Alaska Airlines President Ben Minicucci said, quote, "We are counting on both our guests and employees to be considerate of one another, to wear face coverings, and contribute to our constant effort to keep everyone healthy and safe," unquote. But if you forget your mask, don't worry. Alaska Airlines will provide a mask for you, and the airline will also be providing hand sanitizer wipes on flights. Another airline news, Raven Air is headed for the auction block, but just how it will be sold is yet to be determined. The Alaska Journal of Commerce says a federal bankruptcy judge has approved a plan to sell the company at auction in one of two ways. The sale is expected to take place sometime after July 4th, but before a court hearing on July 9th to finalize the deal. Ravenair said in a statement that about 30 bidders have expressed interest in buying all or some of the company's assets. Only 5 have submitted bids to buy the entire air group. The 2020 Alaska salmon season continues to lag behind previous years, with sockeye salmon especially low, down as much as 70% than last year, as well as the 5-year average. That's according to the weekly Alaska Salmon Harvest Update, provided by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Garrett Everidge, an economist with the McDowell Group, writes and distributes the report. In total, about 5.8 million salmon have been landed so far this season. That is substantially lower than the nearly 14 million fish that had been landed at the same point at 2018. However, Everidge reports that some areas are seeing average or strong production among different species of salmon. Everidge reports that sockeye landings statewide are more than 70% lower than 2019, though in Bristol Bay, the red salmon numbers are down about 80%. But harvests in the bay are not as bad as those in 2015 and 2016. Looking at other parts of the state, some areas of Prince William Sound saw better sockeye fishing last week, while Cook Inlet slowed compared to prior years. The Alaska Peninsula and Aleutian Islands region is about 50% down from last year and 80% off from their 5-year average. Shifting now to pink salmon landings, harvests are relatively strong thanks to the Alaska Peninsula and Aleutian Islands region. However, it is still early in the pink season. Peak harvest for pinks typically occurs in late July and early August. The statewide Kita, or dog salmon harvest, is down 39% from this time in 2019. It is a full 50% lower than the 5-year average. But there is a bright spot here in the Kodiak area, where the dog salmon harvest is 85% ahead of last year and on par with the 5-year average. In the Prince William Sound region, seining has been relatively strong, but the overall harvest is still 44% behind last year. Things are better, but still not great, for dog salmon fishermen in the Alaska Peninsula and Aleutian Islands. The McDowell Group reports that while landings for that area are running 18% below last year. They are actually 10% ahead of the five-year average. An estimated 30 million pounds of salmon have been harvested so far in 2020, and anecdotal reports indicate average size of sockeye and pink are down in Bristol Bay and Alaska Peninsula and Aleutian Islands. Let's see. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski is against defunding the police, but she wouldn't mind disarming them of weapons of war. Murkowski is sponsoring an amendment that would ban the Pentagon from transferring certain surplus military weapons to police departments. Murkowski says officers protecting the peace in American cities don't need things like grenade launchers, armored drones, or bayonets. The program that puts military equipment in the hands of law enforcement personnel has long been controversial, and opposition has grown since police used tear gas and other weapons on citizens protesting police brutality this spring. Protesters have called for defunding police departments. Senator Murkowski told constituents that she's against that.
I would ask people to just take a pause and think about the role that our law enforcement is playing nowadays.
Murkowski says local police keep communities safe and are often the only authorities available to respond in a crisis. Police departments in Alaska have made limited use of the Pentagon Surplus Equipment Program over the years. The list of transferred equipment includes about 60 rifles. They went to primarily to the Alaska Department of Public Safety and also to Juneau Police. The Fairbanks Police Department obtained a mine-resistant vehicle worth nearly $700,000. Among the items the Anchorage Police Department got were unmanned vehicles, bomb disposal kits, and several dozen pairs of mittens. All right, I think we will, let's jump on over to Fish Radio.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Salmon landings are still sluggish, and the fish appear smaller. More after this.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Your CSF purchases will help U.S. fishing towns thrive. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
Salmon fishing is still sluggish in most Alaska regions so far, with a few exceptions. The statewide catch through yesterday topped 6.5 million fish, well below the five-year average of nearly 15.5 million salmon. Sockeye landings are down by more than 70% from this time last year, according to ASME's weekly salmon update. The harvest at Bristol Bay has been especially slow so far, with production down nearly 80% year to date. Cook Inlet sockeye's catches also are lagging behind last year, likewise at the Alaska Peninsula and Aleutian regions. The peak for pink salmon is typically in late July and early August, but the Alaska Peninsula is leading all regions for catches of pinks so far. Kodiak also is seeing okay catches of pinks and is 85% ahead of 2019 chum landings. Overall, Alaska's chum harvest is down nearly 40% from last year and off by 50% from the five-year average. Anecdotal reports say the average sizes of sockeyes are down at Bristol Bay and the same for pinks at the Alaska Peninsula. Chinook salmon in Southeast also appear smaller. The fish are weighing in at 11.7 pounds on average, down 2 pounds compared to the past 5 years. But Chinook trollers did get some good news. The summer fishery that opens today can target 83,900 Treaty Kings, up 51% from last year. Alaska is projecting a total statewide salmon catch this year of 132 million fish, down 36% from 2019. ASME's weekly salmon report is compiled by the McDowell Group. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMSI instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
I don't see any personal messages, so let's jump right into the weather. Right now in Kodiak, 57 degrees, fair skies, northeast wind at 7 miles per hour. It's going to be a beautiful day. We might get up to about 64 degrees with a calm wind. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 52. Light and variable wind becoming west, 5 to 10 miles per hour after midnight. And tomorrow in Kodiak, mostly sunny with a high near 67. West wind, 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming light in the morning. And it looks like we're heading towards a beautiful July 4th. High of 66, partly sunny skies. Not going to be too bad. If you're heading up to the mainland in Homer right now, it's 60 degrees, fair skies, west wind at 10 miles per hour. They'll get up to about 63 degrees, southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, increasing 10 to 15 miles per hour this afternoon. Tonight in Homer, partly cloudy with a low around 47, southwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming light and variable in the evening. And tomorrow in Homer, mostly sunny with a high near 66. Light and variable wind becoming west 10 to 15 miles per hour in the morning. And in Anchorage, 61 degrees, partly cloudy skies, light wind. They're going to get up to about 70 today. Tonight in Anchorage, partly cloudy with a low around 53. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming light and variable after midnight. And tomorrow in Anchorage, increased clouds with a high near 70. Calm wind becoming west around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Well, today is Wednesday, the 1st of July. The sun rose at 5:15 a.m. and will set at 11:12 p.m., giving us 17 hours and 58 minutes. That's about a minute and 31 second drop from yesterday, but the good news is that the sun is going to rise tomorrow at 5:16 a.m. Our record high was 78 in 1989. Record low was 38 in 2009. If you're heading out onto the water, let's take a look at your marine forecast. For the Gulf and Kodiak Island waters, including the Cook Inlet, a broad area of high pressure is just going to hang out over the Gulf through Friday morning, and then a trough will extend across the northern Gulf through Friday morning. So high pressure means beautiful weather, right? For the Shelikof, well, let's jump up. Let's do Barren Islands first. West of the Barren Islands today, west wind of 15 knots, seas at 4 feet. Tonight, west wind of 15 knots with seas at 4 feet, and tomorrow, west wind of 15 knots, seas at 4 feet. For Barren Islands East, today, west wind of 20 knots, seas at 4 feet. Tonight, west wind of 20 knots, seas at 4 feet. And tomorrow, there's a small craft advisory, west wind of 25 knots, seas at 6 feet. From Marmot Island to Sitkanak today, west wind of 15 knots, seas at 4 feet. Tonight, west wind of 20 knots with seas at 4 feet. And tomorrow, west wind of 20 knots with seas at 5 feet. For Chiniak Bay today, variable wind of less than 10 knots with seas at 3 feet. Tonight, variable wind of less than 10 knots, becoming west of 10 knots after midnight, seas at 2 feet. And tomorrow, west wind of 10 knots in the morning, becoming variable, less than 10 knots, seas at 2 feet. For Marmot Bay today, west wind of 10 knots, seas at 2 feet. Tonight, west wind of 10 knots, increasing to 15 knots after midnight, seas at 3 feet. And tomorrow, west wind of 15 knots, seas at 2 feet. And finally, for the Shelikof Strait today, southwest wind of 15 knots with seas at 4 feet. Tonight, southwest wind of 20 knots, seas at 5 feet. And tomorrow, southwest wind of 20 knots with seas at 5 feet. Our tides, well, we got a, Kodiak and the Kodiak District, we're coming off a high tide. We had a high tide at 12:02 p.m. of 6.1 feet. By the low tide this evening at 5:14 p.m. of 1.99 feet. And high tide tonight, 11:44 p.m. of 9.34 feet. Over on the west side, high tide right now at 12:25 p.m. of 12.19 feet. Low tide tonight, 6:10 p.m. of 2.85 feet, and a high tide right around midnight at 12:14 a.m. of 15.06 feet. And I think we've got about a minute left for some community announcements. Well, some good news. The Testamina has been cleared to sail by the Alaska Marine Highway System. The ship has been commercially cleaned and will return to service with July 2nd departure from Homer. So just a reminder that all passengers over 2 years of age and crew are required to wear face coverings while on board, except when in the stateroom or in a designated area. All right, so that's good. The Kodiak Animal Shelter, Humane Society of Kodiak's annual Pet Idol Photo Contest is underway. It runs through July 31st. They will accept up to 5 photos per pet. Voting will happen after August 10th, and the winning pets will be featured in next year's calendar. There are prizes for the Pet Idol of the Year, and you can see all these details on the Kodiak Animal Shelter website or contact them at 486-8077.